जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरा बन चारु जमुना तीरा बन चारु जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम से कहू श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशादि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ ललिता विशाखा देवी की जय। श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा महारानी की जय। श्री श्री गौरनिताय की जय। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Iti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchattaye Vishvavani. Hare Krishna. I'll request the devotees to come forward a little bit to make some space. Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for attending this seminar. As it has been arranged by Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu that we will conduct the seminar for 3 days, like today, and tomorrow will be in the evening from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock is the evening aratik. And then the last day, on the day after tomorrow, since I'm leaving in the afternoon, we'll conduct the seminar in the morning. And actually the topic I have selected for this seminar is a little sensitive topic. Generally, I haven't seen many devotees discuss about this topic in a class or in larger groups. But personally, I felt that it is actually very, very important that we have the proper understanding of what brahmacharya actually is. Because the spiritual life rests on brahmacharya. The word itself will clarify. Brahma means spiritual reality, and acharan means to practice, to act or to conduct. So when we act in such a way that we will become situated in our spiritual identity, that is called brahmacharya. The English translation of the word brahmacharya is celibacy. It's a Greek word. It's derived from the Greek word celibus, which means to remain single or unmarried or bachelor. But that is not really brahmacharya. This may be one aspect of brahmacharya, but in a true sense, celibacy alone is not just brahmacharya. To remain single or remain unmarried is not just brahmacharya. Brahmacharya is far broader a concept. We have two identities. One is material, the other is spiritual. This body is made of matter, and this body made of matter, material body, is alive because of the presence of the soul. So our real identity is spiritual. We are spirit souls. So to become situated in that identity is called brahmacharya. And when one practices brahmacharya, then he automatically becomes a celibate. And our concept of, our understanding of celibacy is far greater than just that remaining single. According to our understanding, according to Prabhupada's teachings, in Krishna consciousness, even the householders are brahmacharis. Even the householders who are situated in the spiritual identity, they are also brahmacharis. So the Krishna consciousness movement is actually a movement to make people brahmacharis. Whether one is a man or a woman, Grihastha or Brahmachari or Vanaprastha or Sannyasi, everyone is a Brahmachari, or everyone should become a Brahmachari. That's why we decided to conduct this seminar. And so now let us consider, as I mentioned, that we have two different identities, the physical identity and the spiritual identity. The body is physical, material. Now, body is made of matter, isn't it? And the soul is spirit. So the body is alive, body remains alive only as long as the soul is in the body. And the moment the soul leaves the body, body becomes dead. So who keeps the body alive? The soul. And actually when we say I, we indicate, we mean the soul. But due to our misconception, we identify ourselves with our bodies. And this body is the source of our material bondage. It is through the body that we are bound, or the soul is bound into the material nature. The soul is the source of consciousness. And when the consciousness is projected through the body, through the nervous system, through the senses, then one thinks himself to be the body. and he acts in a way which is detrimental to one's spiritual identity. One thinks that he is the body and he acts in a way that is not really conducive to his spiritual identity. He is a spirit soul, but he identifies himself with the body. He identifies himself with matter. And in this way he becomes materialized. So whatever happens to the body, he thinks that that's happening to him. When a mosquito bites him, then he thinks, oh, the mosquito is biting me. Right? When he gets some sense pleasure, he thinks that that is what is happening to him. In this way he becomes subjected to pleasure and pain, which is caused by the body. But in reality, he is not, or he should not become affected by the affairs of the body. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that the body is just like a dress. And when the dress becomes old, we discard that old dress to put on a new one. And that is the mystery of life and death. Birth and death. Now, this body is like a dress. Now, if you are wearing a dress and somebody pinches your dress, do you feel any pain? No. But if the difference between the dress and the body is, the body has a very intricate nervous system. And those nervous system is connected, or nervous system ends in different senses. And whatever is perceived by the senses is carried through the nervous system into the brain, and we register that. Like this is a dress, but dress with senses. The body is a dress with senses. So, when you pinch the body, the impression or the sensation is carried onto the brain and you register that. Right? Therefore, when somebody pinches you with something, you feel pain, and somebody tickles you, you feel pleasure. But actually it is just a lump of matter. But the soul, because it has projected its sense, its consciousness through the body, through the senses, it has become subjected to the sense perceptions. And as a result of that, he identifies himself with the pleasure and pains of the body. When there is pain, he resents it, and when there is pleasure, he appreciates it. And in this way he becomes bound by this lump of matter with a very intricate network of nervous system and senses and different other organs. Now, the lump of matter called body is subjected to the desires for the sense gratification. And those sense gratifications have been classified into four different classes: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now these propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, they are common also in animals. These propensities in animals are very strong. There's the whole life centers around where is food. Especially now that it's winter, all the animals are in great distress. Where is food? Then when they get some food and their stomach is filled and satisfied, then they want to sleep. Sleeping becomes their greatest pleasure. And then there are so many different threats, so many different calamities surrounding him. So he tries to defend himself from that, so that he can have a peaceful existence within this body. And then, maithun, mating, copulation. Now, of these propensities, first of all, let us consider that these propensities are actually called animal propensities. And a man also is an animal. Man is a civilized animal. The animal lives in the forest, man lives in cities and villages. Animals live under a tree or in some cave, man lives in a house. The animal defends itself with his claws and fangs, and a man defends himself with nuclear weapons. So the man also, a man is also doing the same thing, but in a little civilized way. That's the only difference. And the mating, here is the most important consideration, that animals are actually controlled by nature's arrangement when it comes to mating. Whereas a man is free to copulate any time he wants. But actually, this freedom has been given to man to mate any time he wants, not for the sake of indulging freely or in an unrestricted way, but to overcome this urges of this desire. Now, why this urge is there? It is actually nature's arrangement. Nature wants to maintain the progeny. This creation must be maintained, and in order to maintain the creation, there is a need for procreation. And procreation is actually a very troublesome and painful affair. And this has been very nicely explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is why nature has arranged some pleasure. It's a painful process which has been coated with certain pleasure. But the real purpose is to allure people into this process so that the procreation could continue. A man and a woman meets in order to procreate. And that is the purpose of mating or copulation. But unfortunately, in today's society, the men have given up, the human beings have given up the procreation aspect of it, and they are just indulging in this process just for some sensual pleasure. That is the most unfortunate state of affairs. So that's why it is very important that we understand the purpose of mating and just act in order to fulfill that purpose and not get deviated at all. So that's why we have to become aware of the purpose of our spiritual practices. In the material nature, because of bad association, people are becoming drawn into this sexual indulgence indiscriminately, just for some sense pleasure. Actually, in the material platform, it is said that that is the highest kind of pleasure. But in the material platform, we should also remember one thing, that for everything you get, you have to pay the price. You go for highest pleasure, then you have to pay a big price also. And what price you are paying? The price that one pays is the loss of his vitality, the loss of his vital energy. Now this vital energy is, in Sanskrit it is called bija or shukra, and in English it is called semen. So what is semen actually? Semen is the essence of life energy. Life energy actually comes from the soul. And it is a combination of two things. Like in the material nature, the living entity takes takes matter in the form of food. And that food actually is transformed into different elements of the body conducted by the spirit soul, who is situated in the heart. It's the spirit soul which is actually activating different organs of the body. And those different organs are extracting different required elements from the foodstuffs. In one hand is foodstuff, and also at the same time, oxygen. Therefore we have three very important functions in the body. One is the respiratory system, breathing, we take oxygen. Another one is circulatory system. The blood circulates throughout the body, and the blood actually carries the life energy from the heart into different parts of the body. And the heart is pumping out the blood is circulating throughout the body, and then after giving out all the life energy that the blood is carrying, the blood becomes empty of that energy. And then the blood comes back into the region of the heart and gets recharged with the vital energy. And that energy is again pumped out through the body. In this way, the heart is pumping blood about 75 times a minute. Can you imagine? It's constantly pumping this energy out. And the blood is the carrier. And the third factor is the digestive system. We take food, and in our stomach there's a fire called Jatharagni. And Jatharagni actually burns the food. And that burning process is called the digestive process. And then it extracts the rasas from the food. Rasa, what is the rasa? Rasa, you can say, is juice. We eat food and the juice of the food is extracted. And then it goes through it transforms into seven different elements. The food first is transformed into rasa, according to the Vedic science. So they are called saptadhatus, the seven essences. So the first thing, transformation, is food transformed into rasa. Then rasa transforms into blood, rakta. Then blood transforms into, from blood comes mamsha or flesh. From flesh comes meda or fat. And then from fat comes bone. And from bone comes bone marrow. And from bone marrow comes sukra or semen. So you can see in the process the finest element is actually semen. And the semen is the storehouse of vital energy. That is the storehouse of vital energy. All the vitality actually comes from this element, which is the essence of all matter in the body, the essence of the body, you can say. And then, this, therefore, the Sanskrit word for semen is virja. And virja actually also means strength. Isn't it interesting to note? The strength is, the strength of a man or strength of a living entity lies in this vital energy. The essence of all that he intakes. And it spreads throughout the body. It spreads throughout the body. And an example is given, just like butter. Butter is the essence of milk. And the butter is spread throughout the milk. Throughout the milk you get butter. Now when the milk is churned, then the butter comes out. Similarly, in the human body, when a person becomes agitated with sexual desire, then this semen actually becomes, it comes out in the form of semen. From the entire body, it just, to a very specific process, through the organs, procreative organs, it comes out in the form of semen, and one loses it. Now when one loses it, consider his condition. Consider the condition of the milk when the butter is taken out of it. It becomes thin. Right? Similarly, when a person indiscriminately, without restriction, indulges in sexual act and loses his semen, he becomes devoid of vitality. And a person devoid of vitality, can he possibly achieve anything? No. He cannot. Therefore, you can notice one thing, that all great people in the world, in whichever sphere it may be, they have a very, they kind of stay away from sexual indulgence. And the other day I was actually reading an article soon after the Olympics in Australia. It was very interesting to note that the trainers of these athletes, they just discourage the competence, the participants in Olympics to indulge in sex life. They say, they put a thing like, no in sexual indulgence for, 1 month before, till the performance. So in this way we can see that even the modern materialistic people are recognizing the importance of retaining semen, what to speak of the spiritualist. So now, mind you, that mind this point, it's actually a very important analogy, that butter is churned out of the milk, is similar to a person losing his vital energy through sexual indulgence. So, we should also remember that this sexual indulgence is exclusively reserved only for the householder, and that also for the sake of procreation. In the Vedic culture, in a spiritual culture, not only in Vedic culture, even in Christianity, even in Judaism, a great importance has been laid on celibacy. Apart from householders, everybody is supposed to be a celibate, means brahmachari, must become situated in his spiritual identity. So, and the householders must remember that the purpose of their getting together, husband and wife, is simply for the sake of procreation, not for anything else. And if men and women, husband and wife, restrict sexual indulgence to mere procreation, then that itself is the observance of brahmacharya. So if a husband and wife simply indulge for the sake of procreation, they are also brahmacharis. Therefore, brahmachari doesn't mean only celibate. Brahmachari means one who is situated in spiritual identity. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki, Jai Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki, Jai Sri Sri Gaur Nithai ki. Now let us consider what is this sex desire. It's a very, very strong desire. It's a very strong desire, and it's the most difficult hurdle to cross for a spiritualist. It's actually the most difficult. We follow the four regulative principles. After a while, the three regulative principles, eating meat, taking intoxication, gambling, we lose taste, we can give it up very easily. But sex desire acts in the other way. Like these three things, I don't really need them. But strangely enough, the sex desire, the more one restricts, the more it becomes strong. So therefore we should always be very, very careful that this is the most difficult hurdle to cross. And it has been described in the Vedic scriptures, sex desire is actually the chain with which a living entity is tied down to the material nature. This material nature is a prison house. But what kind of prison house this material nature is? Maithunagaru. This material nature is a prison house of sex desire. So as long as this sex desire will be there in the heart, we will not be able to become free from this material bondage. And this bondage is caused by whom? It's caused by Maya. And she, the more we try to get rid of this bondage, the more she will tighten the bond and strengthen the bond. Therefore, the more one goes into higher and higher platform, the more one elevates, this temptations for sexual provocation or the sexual provocation will become stronger and stronger. Like a living entity, when he goes to heavenly planet, the facilities for sex life is far superior than the earth planet. And then it is said that before the living entity is about to leave this material nature, then Maya Devi herself tries to pin him down to this material nature. She herself comes and says, "Why are you leaving? Please stay, enjoy with me." Now can you imagine how difficult a situation it is? But our acharyas, like Sanatana Goswami, has pointed out what to do at that time. Through his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he is describing the journey of a living entity going back to Godhead. So the temptation, when he is about to leave the last covering of material, of the universe, then Maya Devi, that is the region of Maya Devi. And she asked, "Why are you going? Please stay." And at that time, what did Gop Kumar do? Gop Kumar said, "Please bless me that I can serve your brother." So who is Jogamaya? Jogamaya is Krishna's sister. So in this way, we should always pray to Krishna, pray to Maya Devi, Jogamaya, Mahamaya, and Jogamaya, that we can become engaged in Krishna's service, that we never deviate to the platform of sense gratification. And and ultimately what it is actually. These informations are actually very nicely given in our Vedic scriptures, very, very scientifically. And there it has been described that although sex desire is there and is the most difficult hurdle to cross, but ultimately what it is actually, it is just an itch caused by the senses. It's an itch, and when it itches, if you scratch, you get some pleasure. So ultimately it is just that, an itch and scratch business. But although there may be some delusive pleasure, some illusory pleasure in that act, but it has a disastrous effect in one's spiritual life. Therefore, a person who is seriously concerned about spiritual advancement must guard himself from this very dangerous pitfall. And Prabhupada has pointed out how to do that. Actually, the yogis and jnanis, they try to artificially do that by restricting themselves or restraining or oppressing this desire, suppressing this desire. But suppression is not the solution. One must overcome it, one must conquer it, one must get rid of this desire. And the way to do it is by getting the higher taste. That is our way. It's just like when the husband and wife get a child, then their attraction for each other becomes centered around the child. And that carnal desire for sex life disappears. Why? Because of the love for their child. Similarly, when a living entity develops his love for Krishna, then he can very easily overcome this degrading desire. So that is our way. Our way is to overcome our sex desire by developing our love for Krishna. And that love for Krishna is the higher taste. And when we develop that higher taste, when we develop our love for Krishna, and from that, when we get the taste, then it becomes, that whole business becomes very disgusting. To begin with, the whole business is disgusting, but it is necessary for the sake of procreation. Therefore, nature has made that arrangement, that illusory arrangement, a man's attraction for a woman, and a woman's attraction for a man. So that is the basis of illusion. The first illusion is to consider that we are these bodies. That is the first illusion. I'm a spirit soul, but I'm thinking that I'm this body. I'm a spiritual being, but I'm thinking that I'm this lump of matter. That is the first illusion. And when I identify myself with the body, then what happens? A male body becomes attracted to a female body, and a female body becomes attracted to a male body. And that is the cause of one's bondage in this material nature. But what we have to recognize is that we are not this body, we are spirit souls. We are parts and parcels of Krishna. And our business is to become connected to Krishna. And how do we become connected to Krishna? We become connected to Krishna through love. Love is the energy that brings us together. Right? Love is actually an energy that's there with the spirit soul. And when that energy, wherever the energy is directed to, the spirit soul wants to become united with that. So when the love is offered to a material object, the spirit soul wants to become one with that object. And that is the That is the business of love. That's what love does. But when love is projected, heart's love is projected onto something in the material nature, then that is called lust. That's not love. When this energy is directed towards Krishna, projected onto Krishna, then only it takes the shape of love. And when this energy is projected onto Krishna, then it is called devotional. Then it is called devotion. And the expression of devotion, expression of love, is in doing something for the object of love. Isn't it? When you fall in love with somebody, what do you do? We want to do something. We want to express our love through some activities. And that activity is called devotional service. So when you offer your love to Krishna, then we automatically become eager to do something for Krishna. And the more we do for Krishna, the more our love for Him becomes intensified. And love is not a one-way traffic. Love is reciprocal. A devotee loves Krishna, and Krishna also loves the devotee. Krishna returns the love manifold. A devotee loves this much, offers this much love to Krishna, Krishna gives this much love to him. Then the devotee says, I don't want to be defeated. I will offer so much love to you. And then Krishna reciprocates. In this way, a loving exchange begins. And that loving exchange is the source of joy, bliss. And that joy is what we all are hankering for. Everything that we do is simply to get that joy. And the real joy comes from being connected to Krishna through our love for Him, which is called devotional service. And we all are here simply to achieve that goal. And when we achieve that goal, and when we develop our love for Krishna, then all the sex life and things will become secondary business. We won't be even interested in that. Kulashekhar, King Kulashekhar, pointed out, a king, Jamunacharya, pointed out that whenever I think of sex life, my lips curl in disgust and I spit at the thought. And it'll naturally happen. It'll naturally happen. And ultimately, actually, this thought will not be there at all. Just like when you were children, we did so many things and it meant so much to us, right? Like making a castle with sand. It meant so much to us. But now we don't even think about it. Isn't it? Why? Because we have grown up out of that phase. Similarly, when you grow out of this material body and become situated in a spiritual identity, these thoughts will automatically go away and we won't even bother to think about it. And in this respect, one very important consideration is for men to learn to respect women. Why the onus is on men? Because the men are the aggressors. Therefore, it is up to the men to learn to respect women. Therefore, Vedic culture teaches one to treat all women as mothers. And when a man learns to respect a woman, then his character becomes stronger. He develops his character. And in a society where they don't know how to respect women, that society is useless. And unfortunately, today's world is heading in that direction. This world is simply trying to exploit women. No respect for women. And that society is very, very unfortunate, heading for a very unfortunate end. Whereas Srila Prabhupada has created a society, a spiritual society, where men will learn to give the highest respect to the women. And they are going to be the builder of the society. If we want to create a wonderful human society throughout the world, we have to establish the spiritual culture. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We have a few minutes left. If anybody has any question, you can ask.
Is there a spiritual world, conjugal relationship between living entities or copulations?
No. And the question is there a conjugal relationship in the spiritual world, a copulation there? No. Because in order to enter into spiritual world, one has to overcome sex desire. Just to enter there, you have to overcome sex desire. Then does it sound logical that when you go there, then you will end up in sex life? No. But that loving exchange is there. But that love is not expressed through body. Right? In the material world, one develops attraction to the opposite sex, and the ultimate culmination is in copulation. But in the spiritual world, the love is actually for Krishna. And then what actually happens, when you develop that love, then the vital energy inundates our heart with nectar. And that nectar becomes the source of joy. Our love for Krishna, actually the loving relationship between Krishna and his devotees in the spiritual world is reflected in a perverted way, in the material nature, in the form of sex life. So the point is, in the spiritual world there is no sex life. But love is there. The union is there, but from this point we cannot understand. Who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha Krishna together. So, can you understand what it means? At least theoretically we understand that when, in their intense loving exchange, Radha and Krishna embrace each other, then they become Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that personality has come down to distribute that love to us. Not sexual indulgence, but the highest spiritual love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the diametrically opposed things may apparently appear to be alike, but they are qualitatively, completely opposite. Like sunrise and sunset apparently may look alike, but they're completely opposite. Okay.
You mentioned the interesting point about that, like in the beginning, it's not so difficult to deal with even sex desire. I also experienced this also. Later on it becomes more and more strong again. But then there's also this verse from the Bhagavad which says that this imposes devotional service and washes away the sex desire of
Yeah. So you want me to comment on that? Okay, the point is that you mentioned that initially it's not difficult to overcome sex desire, the urge is not that strong, but eventually the urge becomes very strong. But also Srimad Bhagavatam says that through devotional service one can conquer it. That's what I have been telling also. Right? Okay, since you wanted me to elaborate. You see, initially one doesn't have such strong urge for sex desire because the milk is devoid of butter. Right? So the urge is not that strong. But when you restrain from that, you know, that virya keeps on increasing in the body. And as it increases, the urge also becomes greater. But when one develops his love for Krishna, then he experiences such joy that he doesn't feel any attraction. Because Krishna consciousness actually elevates one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Therefore, in the material, as long as one is in the material platform, the sexual desire is the strongest urge, right? But when one comes to the spiritual platform, then he leaves that platform behind. Okay. I'll take you, and then I'll take your question.
Okay. If one elevates himself to the spiritual world, one retains his spiritual body, and when you enter the spiritual world, is it possible to elevate yourself high to a high platform in the spiritual world?
Yes, in spiritual platform, spiritual world also there are higher and higher platforms. There is Brahma Jyoti, there is Mahesh Dham, there is Vaikuntha. In the upper part of Vaikuntha is Ayodhya, then Dwarka, then finally in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan also there is a relationship of friendship, there is parental and conjugal. So yes, in spiritual world also is full of variety. And variety means, you know, higher and higher. And the highest is Vrindavan.
And what's the highest position within Vrindavan?
Highest position in Vrindavan? You read Prabhupada's books. Go step by step. Right? Read Prabhupada's books, you'll get to understand. Yes, Ilyin? Okay, good point. Like if sex desire is suppressed, can it come out in the form of other desires, like desire to eat too much? Yes, that's why the artificial suppression has been discouraged. The natural way to overcome it is by developing our love for Krishna. Therefore, we try to develop it through a natural process of Krishna consciousness. And in Krishna consciousness, you can eat as much as you want. Take Krishna prasad and koribare jivaja. In order to control our tongue, Krishna has given his prasad. So eat as much as you want. Okay, Lila Madhuri. Yeah. Prabhupada may have used the expression sex life, but it is not what goes on in, you know, sex life in the material nature. It means in the spiritual world is the intense attraction for between a living entity and Krishna. That intense attraction is reflected, pervertedly reflected in the material nature. There, you see, a spirit soul becomes united with another spirit soul. That means supreme spirit soul, Krishna. In the spiritual world, there is no such intense loving relationship between one living entity and another living entity. You see, in the spiritual world, it is all love is for Krishna. So not between two living entities. Whereas in the material nature, it is between two bodies. In the spiritual nature, for two spirits, for a spirit soul to become united with Krishna through intense love, is a natural phenomenon. Whereas in the material nature, two lumps of matter trying to become one is an abnormal phenomenon. Yes, Sachin, last question.
Maharaj, I have a question now. How would you explain the appearances of the little infant star, the kids that take part in the spiritual world?
What? Can you come forward a little bit?
Sorry.
I'll just take 1 minute.
Sorry. How would you explain the appearance of the little infants and the kids in the spiritual world?
Okay, they don't just appear like that.
The divine appearance
of it is by Krishna's will. They manifest, right? And there everything is eternal. It's not that some living entity just was born day before yesterday, right? In the spiritual world everything is eternal, everyone is eternal. How? We can't figure out unless we go there. Hare Krishna.